I was posting YouTube videos like every 2 or 3 days, getting very few views. And also the worst bit was getting laughed at within the industry. Creating your own path and forcing it to work was something I learned from that.
David O'Keefe, professional wakeboarder, digital creator, and car reviewer, renowned for his dynamic presence both on the water and online. A 3-time European Wakeboarder of the Year, he's now making a splash in media and content creation with his latest venture, Making Waves.
With wakeboarding, I never made a lot of money until I started YouTube. Basically, in a competition, if you make one error, it's game over. Fear and negativity can put you off continuing something, whereas the optimism of it and going, you know what, I was close there. Like, to learn a trick, you have to, like, fall 100 times.
Yeah.
So I'd always try and zoom out of things and always try and look at the positive.
The energy that we let in is so impactful. If I'm sitting across the table from somebody that I don't feel comfortable with, I can feel it here and I'm like, oh God. Welcome, David O'Keefe, to Find Your Edge. This podcast has evolved over the years. It started out as we were talking about success stories, and we've realized that there's a huge edge involved in that. And speaking of edges, looking at your videos, edges are something that we're going to be talking about in a second. I've only known you from what Matthew has spoken about, and I've seen your videos, I've seen your amazing content. How would you describe yourself? And I want you to give a little intro as to who you are, your elevator pitch as to who you are.
My elevator pitch, geez. Okay, so I suppose my background is wakeboarding, which is a very unusual sport. It's kind of like snowboarding on water. And I did that as a child, and then I kind of grew into it, started getting a few sponsors and doing a little bit of competing, and then kind of pushed in that. I did probably 10 or 12 years of just doing that full-time, traveling the world. And I started kind of making some videos in that, tutorials, things like that. Started a YouTube channel, that went relatively well. And then from that, I kind of found a passion in making videos. Then I suppose the other side of things that I was always fascinated in was cars, and I'm still like absolutely upset. It's like a sickness, to be honest.
Oh yeah.
But so I've gotten really into cars, and I really wanted to make videos in cars. So then I ended up making videos with Dundeal, doing their car reviews. And then from that, I kind of spun out into a full-blown production. So basically what happened was I was making the videos, so I was not only kind of the presenter, but also the production.
Yeah.
And so now I have a small company called Making Waves Media. We produce videos for loads of industries, from like construction, cars, retail, kind of everything, events.
Amazing.
And so, yeah, that's kind of me. And I also do a bit of presenting for Red Bull. I kind of do a little bit of everything.
I knew that bit about you as well. So it's everything kind of just happened for you. You kind of just happened to start wakeboarding, and then all of a sudden happen to compete at a high level, get sponsors. So you're obviously, when you do things, you do them properly.
Yeah, I kind of, yeah, like, I suppose a lot of guests you'll probably have on this, very like determined once I get into something. And when I get into it, I get quite addicted to it, and it kind of consumes me. And then, yeah, so with the wakeboard in the early days, like I was in the winter in Ireland, breaking the ice, going out wakeboarding, like anything to get out there. And then it was the same once I got into cars. Like, it sounds really boring, but I started like learning about like boot sizes of every car and like having a weird interest in that, and specs and all this type of stuff. And so whatever I kind of do, I just get really, really into it.
Amazing. So let's go back to the wakeboarding piece. First of all, I absolutely love wakeboarding, but I've only ever been able to do it in, you know, on a holiday somewhere. I was fortunate enough to do it in New Jersey when I was there on holidays for a month or two. Absolutely loved it, and it's so addictive. But like, when did you decide you're going to take this serious? And that must have been a bit of a brave move, because we're talking about a number of years ago in Ireland, where like, who knows who, anybody that's a wakeboarder in Ireland?
Yeah, there wasn't too many. Yeah. There was like a small group of us. So I was doing it relatively competitively, like traveling a good bit. And then I actually went, when I finished school, I went into university, into UCD. And it was a real struggle to balance the two of them, particularly with like UCD, they weren't brilliant at allowing me. Unfortunately, they're brilliant if you do a mainstream sport. Yeah. But a sport like that's so niche, they weren't amazingly supportive, and I ended up like, to go to a World Cup stop, I ended up like failing a whole module.
Oh, no.
And it was a silly thing. So anyway, I basically about halfway through the year, I was like, right, I actually really want to try this full time. My parents are a little bit traditional in terms of like, you know, get a degree and all that. So I managed to basically negotiate with them that I could take 1 year out if I finished that year. And then that 1 year, we're like 12 years later. Still haven't gone back. But yeah, that was kind of the leap of faith, I suppose.
Amazing.
But it wasn't a cold turkey. Like, I had a very small income within wakeboarding at the time. I was competing. It wasn't like a complete, you know, zero to nothing. I kind of was able to transition into it.
Well, so you took a leap of faith. At what age were you then?
19,
20, I was going to say. Amazing. You were already getting a little bit of momentum. So that's always good. And it's nice, you know, to have that based. If you're going to jump, you'll want to jump and know that at least you have a parachute if you need it there.
Yeah.
Do you like, when I speak to people like you, so many successful people in different walks of life have taken that big leap of faith and gone against the norm. Is that something that was just in your gut that you went, I just need to try this? This is an itch I have to scratch.
Yeah, specifically, I was at this World Cup stop in Australia, and because I went there, I'd failed. It was actually Introduction to Arts, like the most spoofy like module you could ever fail. But I failed that as a result of going there. But then because I hadn't been training, like a lot of my friends who were just doing full-time wakeboarding, I ended up doing really badly in the competition. And I remember being on the bus to the airport and just being like, this is just so, like, I'm not doing either quite well. You know what I mean? So that was really the time where I was like, I have to do this now.
This episode of Find Your Edge is brought to you by Hedgehogs vs. Foxes, a video production studio crafting bold cinematic content for brands in lifestyle, corporate, events, and more. Visit us at hvf.ie to learn more.
How do you train for wakeboarding? So is it just literally time in the water, or is there more to it?
It's evolved, because it was kind of like that surfery sport where back in the day everyone would be like, this kind of before my time, but would like be drinking and up to no good, yeah, and then like just doing it and whatever. And it's kind of now got a lot more professional. I was in a kind of a weird limbo period where we took training on the water quite seriously, but unless I was injured, I didn't really go to a gym or anything. Whereas now, like, the young guns, they're in the gym like 2-3 days a week, like training, working specific muscles to kind of improve that 1%, yeah, or even less than 1%. Yeah. But at the end of the day, time in the water is the most valuable thing.
Sure. And that 1% obviously is, when we speak with anyone at elite level in sport, to gain 1%, you'll do anything. You'll do those extra 2 days a week in the gym. You'll do the early nights. You'll do all that. And do you feel like you made any sacrifices that, you know, big sacrifice at the time that you went, right, for me to achieve this, and I'm anyone who listens to this podcast, we know I'll talk about, if you want to achieve something, you kind of have to give something as well. And what sacrifice do you feel you made as a result, aside from your degree?
Yeah, well, I didn't, like, often in the moment, they don't feel like sacrifices because I was quite tunnel visioned in what I wanted to do. But looking back, I probably missed a few of the typical things. Like, I didn't go on a 6-year holiday, pretty much any holiday from the age of about 12 or 13 till I was like 27 was based around wakeboarding. So I missed a few things like that, like nights out and things. But like, I never felt like, oh, I'm missing this or missing that. It was kind of what I wanted to do was wakeboard. And like, I would go wakeboard with my friends in Belfast, and then they'd be like fed up and have to go do their jobs. And then I'd go down to Cork or across the world or wherever it was. So I kind of always felt like it wasn't a sacrifice, but just what I wanted to do.
Yeah, that's amazing at that age to be that confident in a decision that, you know, I don't mind missing the night out. I don't mind going against the norm. And I'm probably jumping ahead of myself in saying this, but do you think that's what's then translated into your business endeavors, setting up your own media company, working with Red Bull, working with brands, that you decided you wanted something and you had that tunnel vision, as you said?
Yeah, I think so. Like, it's kind of, I suppose, one thing that sport teaches anyone, whether it's team sport, individual sport, is you will, like, you'll mess up and you kind of have to go back and keep trying. So like, the analogy I always use is wakeboarding. Like, to learn a trick, you have to like fall 100 times. Yeah. And so you just keep getting set back, but you just kind of have to pop up. Like, you literally pop out of the water and you're like, right, next try. And then you might watch a video and figure out like what went wrong there and analyze a little bit. But yeah, I think it's kind of stuck through. So even like every single day in work, something goes wrong. Like, I always say, like, I'm a little bit of a fireman in terms of, like, you know, problem happens, like, you'll film something, the audio didn't work or whatever, and you just kind of have to assess that and then kind of try and move forward from it. So yeah, I definitely think it's taught me a lot in that respect. Yeah.
Are your parents entrepreneurial, or were they, you know, in the sporting side level, were they kind of overachievers or big achievers as well?
And not in sport anyway. No, they like to walk, but that's a bit nice. Definitely my parents are quite different. Like, my mum's a bit of a looper and like a mad woman, and I have a bit of that in me, but my dad's like really calm, calculated. Definitely my dad had, like, he always had a job, but he kind of had some side things as well, and so did my mum. So not like full-blown outright entrepreneurs, but definitely had that in them, and I think it kind of translated from them, really.
Deadly. So making mistakes in the water, obviously there's a consequence of that. There's a fall, there's an injury potential, all that sort of stuff. Is fear something that's involved with that process? I mean, listen, getting up on the water and doing a trick and hitting a wave, and I feel the fear already myself, but for you, is fear something you encountered on that journey?
Yeah, but in a great way. Like, I think those anxious feelings or like the fear of trying a new trick, or like honestly sometimes we've gone to shoots and I'm like, we're probably over our depth here, like we're two people turning up to like something that we might need, you know, five or six. But I think it's kind of a really nice feeling if you can channel that correctly. It's brilliant. And that's what I always found trying new tricks. I would always say to myself, like, I'm going to do this eventually. Like, I really want to try it, whether it's a double flip or whatever it was. I'm going to do it eventually. So I might as well just do the first one now. And usually the first time you do it, you kind of think to yourself, you almost unlock it and you go, I can probably do this. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think fear is an amazing thing and you should probably steer into
Lean into it. Yeah. Yeah. There's, you know, and it's, what age are you? You're 20.
I'm 31. You're getting old.
Oh yeah, you're getting old. I'm 40. So I had to read books about this. I had to really, like, I had to train this skill of leaning into fear, because at different stages in my life, it was all consuming and paralyzing. But clearly you've just went, I don't get paralyzed. I get back out, pop up out of the water, and I go again. And I mean, at a young age, this is something you were doing. So that's amazing that you've achieved that. And when I speak to younger people starting out in business or starting out new things, like, the fear cripples and fear holds people back. And one of my questions I had was, like, do you have like practical skills that you've implemented, or like your meditation, your visualization? But you're kind of telling me already that you have, in the sense that the double flip, you knew you were going to get it. You have this self-belief. How has that come to you? And like, how have you curated that as such?
Probably, like, honestly, I a little bit of my background, like my family and my parents, like, they would always be really encouraging, like, just, you can kind of do whatever, like, you know, the typical, like, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
They always had that attitude, but also they would kind of help you with the steps in terms of how to do it and give you the ability to do it. And I also genuinely think wakeboarding has given me a lot of self-belief, because I would, in my early days, it wasn't like now where there was hundreds of videos on YouTube where you can watch tutorials. Mm-hmm. I would have been figuring it out on my own on a cold lake in Cavan. Like, it was pretty diabolical. But I suppose, so I figured it out, like, with a little bit of persistence, I can do this. And usually there is a solution to the problem. Mm-hmm. And so I suppose that by doing that two or three times, you then get more confident the next time you go into it. And then you compound that over like thousands of times with thousands of tricks. It just gives you a huge amount of belief.
You just don't know any other way other than, okay, failure is part of that journey.
Yeah.
And do you, at this stage of your life, like, wakeboarding has taken a bit of a backseat. Is that fair to say, from a competitive standpoint?
Absolutely. I haven't competed properly since 2019. I think it was December, November 2019, my last big event. And I was always planning to take a slight step back from competing at that point.
Mm. So if you were to talk to young wakeboarders coming through the ranks now, and, you know, they have YouTube and they have social media stuff that where they can see this and they can, you know, learn from all this. Like, if you were to give them one practical piece of advice and to be the best version of themselves they could be, what would that be now?
It might be very specific to wakeboarding, but one thing I think I made a mistake in was I didn't immerse myself as much as I could have within the wakeboarding community. Particularly, it happens in Florida. And I did live there for a while, but I ended up wakeboarding with like a small bubble of English people. And actually what I would have been better doing, and what I advised any younger athletes, is to be around the people who are like a couple steps ahead of you, whether it's a few years older and they've been there for longer, or better wakeboarders, because being in the boat with them, you'll just learn more, you'll progress faster. And I think it's the same with everything. If you know, I'm a small business, if I hang around with people who have slightly bigger businesses, you get a little bit more like kind of buzzed about that. And so I think it is true, like, surround yourself with a good circle. I definitely think it makes it huge.
And that line, and this is where this podcast kind of started, and where for me, where my business evolved, was the line, success leaves a trail. So if you want to be something, to find someone who's already living that life you want to live, and, you know, take the positives from that and learn and immerse yourself in it. That's a really, really smart one. When you are, obviously, wakeboarding, there is the physical component, which we've spoken about, and there's the fear piece to it. But is there more from a mentality point of view that you had to work on, like the self-belief, but the, you know, the overcoming fear, the technical aspects of it, the dealing with the competitive edge, dealing with the anxiety of competition? From a mentality point of view, you just got that, or you think that's something that you had to work hard on as well?
I definitely worked hard on it, but I will openly say I was lucky to just, when it came to getting those nerves in a competition, because basically in a competition, if you make one error, it's game over, kind of. Like, one time, like, I mean, like, your finger's here instead of here. Like, it really, you missed the rope or whatever it is. And so I always was able to channel that energy in a good way. And I honestly don't know what that is. And I had really good friends who were probably better wakeboarders than me, but every time in competition, the nerves would just get to them. I don't know what that is. I definitely was able to improve it. I definitely found, kind of towards the end of my competing, I would stand, you'd be like on the dock before you go out in the water, and I'd be there thinking, these feelings are familiar. They're really good. I know if I now channel this correctly, it will work in my favor. And it generally does. So yeah, I don't think, I definitely honed in on it over the years, but I was also really fortunate to get it.
Do you have a strong internal dialogue, do you think? I noticed you telling me, like, I'm standing on the pier beside you there, as you say. Yeah, so you're creating a good visual. You're in the media world, so you need to be able to do that. You're telling that story already. But do you feel like there's a dialogue there that you rely on a bit?
I've never really realised this, but absolutely. Like, I probably talk to myself way too much. And I like, almost narrate things sometimes.
Sure.
And I would even, so when you're on the water, you generally, in a competition, you can't hear the commentator. But I would often commentate to myself, as in I would pretend to be the commentator. I would be like saying, like, oh, David Ossie coming in now, like on the heels, what's he going to do? Like, I'd nearly do that as I was wakeboarding. And I would do that training. So yeah, maybe.
That's not the first time I've actually heard that. So I worked with the Red Bull. I was at the Red Bull cliff diving event up the north, and we interviewed some of them. And all the divers, I loved getting into their mindset of like, there's huge fear involved. It's, again, you know, one finger out of place, but like, if the splash is too big, or if the turn isn't fully complete, or if there's a finger that's not straight, that's a difference in a point, right? And you know, some of them have it all written out on the board at home and how they want to do it, and there's nearly a mathematical side to it. And there's another girl, and she's like, you'll see me standing here, and I'm like rolling, and I'm turning, and I'm flipping, and she's like, and I'm narrating it in my head.
Yeah.
And I love hearing this, because, you know, I think the success stories and success leaves a trail translates into everything. And whether it's just for your own personal growth in a relationship, or, you know, as a parent, or in a business, or in a sport, like, we grab onto something from all of these different things, and you know, you narrate your business story and you narrate your life story. I think that's really, really a really interesting, really smart way of doing things. Have you had any personal struggles that you've had to overcome as part of the wakeboarding journey, never mind even getting into business?
Not too. I mean, I suppose, like, truthfully, running it successfully, like, from a financial point of view, is tough. Mm-hmm. And like, I obviously definitely could never have got into it without my parents. I was lucky then in the latter years, like, I was independent financially from it, but it was tough, and there was stuff that you had to do that you didn't want to do. Like, I in the off season, I would travel around coaching, and that's like, I really enjoyed it, to be completely honest, but at the same time, it took a massive toll on, like, my ability to improve my own wakeboarding, because you're spending 8, 9, 10 hours in the sun as an Irish person in the boat, and I'm just burnt to a crisp.
Yeah,
I don't have energy to really push my own riding after that. So that was definitely a huge one. I didn't struggle too much with anything else, being honest. Like, I mean, I suppose, yeah, it was tough if at any point in that time when I was traveling a lot, like, you couldn't have necessarily personal relationships too easily, or not with any difficulty. So yeah, it was definitely that, but no, luckily I was quite fortunate.
And now you're an entrepreneur, by all accounts. You're a media owner, is that right to say? An MC, and you seem to constantly now, you're like, you're on the hunt for new jobs and it just sounds so creative, from the water straight to now the camera. Do you feel the personal struggles that you had to overcome, and the having to build that wakeboarding business side of it? Do you think that's translated straight across into business in itself?
100%. You have to be resourceful with it. Also, you kind of need to kind of, like, cut your own path in it, if that makes sense. So, like, even with the car stuff, it was something that I tried to get into for a few years and had no luck, because there's no jobs on LinkedIn that's like, oh, car reviewer who films videos or whatever. I kind of had to create it, and I went to Dundee with the proposal. I went to other people beforehand and kind of got, genuinely one of them, I got laughed out of the room. They're like, no way, this will, like, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
But then Dundee were brilliant. So I definitely kind of have that attitude of, you know, with wakeboarding, I never made a lot of money until I started YouTube. And then all of a sudden I had some of the highest viewership, or I had the highest viewership by like 10x in the whole industry. And I wasn't doing anything special. It was just, I was the only person doing YouTube at the time. And so then all of a sudden to brands, I was a lot more attractive, because it wasn't just about where I was finishing in contests and, you know, my being geographically located in Orlando, because you have to be. It was all of a sudden I was, you know, a value because I was selling boards. And then I had like a board with my name on it, and it sold out before they even built it. And that hadn't happened before. So I think, yeah, definitely, you know, creating your own path and forcing it to work was something I learned from that.
Unbelievable determination, man. That's it. It's an inspiring story to date. With the YouTube thing, because look, I'm in a different world to you, but I've tried my hand at it, and if I'm being very honest, I've never followed through with social media, and I've never followed it. And it's probably lack of self-belief in it. And you know, do people want to listen to what I want to talk about?
It's patience as well. Like, I think
patience,
like, their first year and a half was like, or 2 years, I was posting YouTube videos like every 2 or 3 days. Getting very few views. And also the worst bit was getting laughed at within the industry. And like, that all changed in the long term. But it was, yeah, patience was a big one, really.
You're not afraid to fail. And that, like, in my opinion, just looking at you from the outside in, obviously that's from like repeatedly failing. It's like, once you've done it a number of times, you know, the sting isn't as bad. And you're like, I failed that, but I will master this trick. I failed, but I will master this business idea. That's very inspirational. And do you think failure had a big role in your journey?
Yeah, but I also think I kind of looked at it more of a positive. I'm quite a glass, like, three quarters full. Like, I'm very positive. Annoyingly so, I'm sure, in some scenarios. Yeah. But I would always zoom out. And so I wouldn't be, let's say I have a bad day on the water, I wouldn't compare it to yesterday. I would compare it to a year ago. And I would be trying tricks that I wouldn't have dreamt of trying a year ago. So I would always try and zoom out of things and always try and look at the positive. Because I definitely think fear and negativity can put you off continuing something, whereas the optimism of it and going, you know what, I was close there, that can actually draw you forward.
That's a super mindset to have. Yeah, definitely. I'm a big fan, even in fitness stuff, and I'm working as a personal trainer where people are, you know, they've only lost X amount of weight in a week, for example. I'm like, oh, that zoom outline is like, people are sick of hearing me talk about it. But when you zoom out, those little micro goals and those little small, tiny little targets become huge. The compounding interest on that is massive. What do you think if you're to put your mindset or one mindset or one skill that's most important to your success, do you think it's a visualization or do you think it's self-belief or is it something that we've missed?
Trying to think now, what would I say? I think, consistency probably is that whatever it was, the compounding effect of being consistent. So if it's making YouTube videos, just posting 3 times a week, even if the video performs awfully or whatever, just continuing. Same with wakeboard tricks, just consistently trying it. Same with making videos for clients now or whatever, getting it right. You know, we haven't nailed, just last week we kind of messed up a little video and I'm not going ahead and going, oh, that's that done now. Like, we've messed that up. We've got a very similar event coming up and I'm looking forward to kind of having a second go at it and just consistently showing up and trying to do it. So I think optimism and consistency would be the two things I really see as like kind of a superpower.
Yeah. And the optimism piece, I think, comes from your parents or from somewhere else.
Yeah, probably.
And that's amazing. But the consistency thing has to be from, you know, the time in the trenches, time in the water. Do you think that when you look at, when I look at in my world, like coaches, younger coaches who are starting out and trying to become successful in the gym and trying to become successful online, like that consistency piece is the one that they really lack. Like, I'm 24 years, 25 years working in the fitness industry. So I've been consistently showing up and, you know, hundreds of thousands of PT sessions. I think that consistency thing is probably the hardest one. If you don't have that self-belief, is the hardest one to build. Anyway, you've obviously got that in spades. Today, how do you define success and what does success look like?
It's changed massively. I mean, because obviously when I was younger, it was like travel the world, wakeboarding, like, you know, that type of stuff. Now for me, I definitely, in an ideal successful, if I was to look outlook, I'd like to travel a little bit less because I like having a bit of routine. Funny enough, I find routine an element of success. I like getting to the gym and then maybe going and doing a sauna or something. If I could do that every day, I'd be super happy. I also find, you know, having like good people around you, like, you know, friends, family, of a long-term girlfriend who's brilliant as well. So having all that is very important to success for me. But I also think then having goals you're working towards, I think if you sit with your feet up, you won't be happy. And I think success to me is kind of probably happiness. They correlate very similarly.
Definitely.
So I think all those things together create like a success. Then I have like obviously goals that are, let's say, financial or whatever that would happen or would help and kind of contribute, but I don't think they're the most important either.
And you've got it dialed in. I love that.
There's problems too.
No, but the problems are not what you're focusing on. And your successes, that sounds like a very balanced, successful answer. You know, health and mindset and the community around you. You've seen that and learned that throughout the years. Do you find it hard to balance the work and passion and play? Or has the kind of, you parked the wakeboarding thing in a sense, the competitive wakeboarding piece now. So do you find that balance hard to get?
It is. Like, I actually really enjoy probably wakeboarding nearly now more than I did in the, let's say, when I was really training.
Yeah.
But I struggle to get out enough, being honest. I'd love to wait. And now part of that's because it's difficult in Ireland, but also I just don't make time for it. Same with like friends. Now I've gotten way better at that. I have a very close group of friends that are like I value massively. And I have done a lot of travel in the last year with my partner. So I've kind of am getting better at it. But then yeah, it comes at a cost to me being anxious that like I'm falling behind at work. And I live in we would work with consistent clients or whatever, and I would live with this constant like, oh, what if the contract doesn't renew or whatever, you know what I mean? But that's probably a driving force.
Yeah, and that's the joy of being an entrepreneur, of being self-employed, is, you know, things like we saw that with COVID, things just get pulled out from underneath just
sometimes.
There is uncertainty there, but I think the general 9-to-5 life versus the inconsistency and maybe the uncertainty, when I weigh them up, I'm like, I'd rather have the uncertainty.
Yeah.
Yet the control and the freedom.
Exactly. Like, I always think it's funny, like, yeah, I'd probably work, I think last year I worked like 32 weekends or something like that. But I love being able to like do a household chore on a Tuesday afternoon. Yeah. Like that ability of, you know, I actually need to go to the bank today or whatever it is.
Exactly. And if at some stage you have children, I have a little daughter and I went out on a bike with her at 11 o'clock on a Tuesday cycling around the place. I'm like, this is why I work for myself. So look, that's amazing. Has there been books, people or experiences that have had a big impact on you that you think, you know, were life changing or changed your kind of your mindset or even your direction with things?
Definitely books. I'm not a massive reader, if I'm being honest. I've read, like, is it Malcolm something, the 10,000 Hours?
Yeah, Malcolm Gladwell.
Gladwell, yeah. I have read that like a long time ago and I took a lot from it. But what would I say? Certainly people. Sometimes I get like, there's a couple of people who just have an amazing energy. And like when you come away from them, you kind of start to be a bit more buzzed about life or whatever it is. So I definitely find that. Also, even just watching other industries on I follow some YouTubers and I find them fascinating. Mm-hmm. Some of them are like really deep in the car world or whatever. And I'd be watching them or go to the video because of the car, and I might stay because of the person and how they actually are, you know, their outlook and so definitely I would struggle to pinpoint. I mean, I could name a few now, but no, nothing specifically, just kind of really just trying to, you know, particularly online, there's such a negativity out there and I just completely steer away. Like my TikTok feed is all just positive. Like there's I don't see any negativity on TikTok, let's say, because I just follow people or
don't look at it.
Yeah.
You just don't let it in.
Scroll on.
Yeah. And I think the energies that we let in around us, you've mentioned that community when you were wakeboarding and in the States and stuff, the energy that we let in is so impactful. And for me, if I'm sitting across from the table from somebody that I don't feel comfortable with, I can feel it here. And I'm like, oh God.
Yeah.
I remember someone telling me this years ago that like, if they sit down to have a meal with someone on a big business decision and they don't feel comfortable eating, they won't do business with them.
Yeah, it's fair.
Like, if you think about it on a primal state, if we're eating, you know, we're protecting our food and we're in a vulnerable state. And if you're sitting beside someone and you don't feel comfortable, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
But I think it's something to, there's something to take from that. So the Red Bull MC piece, how did that come about? Is that just something that again evolved from being in those circles and then you started, people went, this guy's a nice voice, let's get him in front of a microphone, or what happened there?
So I'm going to say the best thing I ever did in life was starting a YouTube channel, because so much opportunity has come from it. And I don't, like, my YouTube channel's still there, I still upload, not as frequently as I once did, but so much opportunity has come from that subsequently. And one of the big ones was, one day I got a Facebook DM from someone who at the time was essentially at the high end of the Red Bull cliff diving world.
Amazing.
And they were looking for a new, it was kind of like a social media host and then live reporter. And he said, listen, would you, like, this isn't a job offer, you'd need to like meet and interview with some of the TV people, but would you be interested in it? So I said yes. And how he actually found me was, he wakeboarded and he was watching my tutorials to learn. And so anyway, did an interview with that. I did three events as a kind of a test, and then it went really well. And I've been kind of doing it since. So that's like 7 years ago now.
They're a brilliant brand. As I said, I've done some work with them in the past and absolutely love Red Bull. I think they've done so much for every sporting industry and sector in a lot of ways, but like specifically like the cliff diving and obviously obstacle course racing, high rocks. Now they're getting involved in everything like that. Working with brands like Red Bull, has that opened even more doors again for you then?
100%, like the credibility that comes with it, like I hate saying it, but it is a little bit of a leverage point, because often, let's say, smaller Irish brands that might still be quite big, and they might be a little bit apprehensive because we're not a big agency that has been established for years. We're kind of a smaller production company. But then having that, oh, they do stuff with with Red Bull, or they do stuff with, you know, all these other brands. It does bring a lot of credibility.
It's interesting, that association. It's like you said, be around, immerse yourself in the communities and being around the brands. It's like the same narrative and the same story is just translating into from wakeboarding through to business and your own personal and business growth. It's success leaving a trail, and I think that's huge. Have you tried have you dived off any of those boards yet?
I haven't got, so I've done, what did I do? I could butcher this, but I think I've done like 14 meters, which is,
no, 14 meters is
scary, yeah. But they're 21 for the women and 27 for the men.
Yeah.
Apparently I'm not allowed to dive off the 21.
Not sure. Like,
insured, yeah. Honestly, I'm quite okay with
it. Very okay with it. We were standing on the pier looking at them jumping off it in Ballycastle, and I was like, I don't want to jump off the pier into the water, never mind off those boards. Those guys are crazy. But again, like, being around them is infectious. They've got this great energy. They're so, first of all, they're amazing athletes. Like, their mobility and how their body awareness, obviously for your sport, that must be something that's extremely important as well. But they blew me away at how amazing they were and how chill they were about it, because they're like hitting water at, I don't know what speed it is, but it's pretty fast.
Yeah, no, I think is it 70 kilometers?
Yeah,
I should actually know this. But yeah, and you're right, like, hanging around them, you go to like a weekend at an event and then you kind of come home and you're just like, that was, you know, that was class.
Yeah,
it was a sport that I didn't follow, and now I'm like quite invested. Like,
yeah,
when I'm watching that last round, and particularly towards the end of the season when there's big changes happening, it's quite exciting to watch, you know what I mean? So it has been amazing. And like you say, you just come home bit, because some of them are both great athletes, but their mindset is incredible. And that,
yeah, and like I was fortunate enough to interview a few of them, and they're different attitudes, but like, they all have just different approaches, and straight away I'm taking pieces from that, from my own training or from my own business stuff, from my own. Do you ever have bad days? Do you ever have low days?
100%. Like, I have low weeks sometimes. Like, sometimes you just get, like, you just keep getting kicked. Do you know what I mean? Like, and it just, it might be our fault, it might be someone else's fault, but like, at the end of the day, yeah, all the time. Like, I would say probably have like nearly 60% bad days, probably. But generally, the good outweigh the bad.
Yeah, and what do you call on a day like that? Like, is it a case that you like just put the head down and get through this? Or is it a case that you're like, I need to listen to a podcast, I need to be around someone else? Or is it, do you have anything you call on? Or everything?
Put everything. Probably in an unhealthy way, like probably eat bad food can be a bad one. In a more positive way, like, I've gotten really into it, probably for the last 3 years now, like steam room or sauna and cold plunge. And I do it in the gym, and sometimes I skip the gym and just go straight to it. That would be a bad day.
A lot of people doing that.
But what's brilliant about it is, like, in my gym, you can't bring your phone in, you can't bring it. So it's a complete switch off for half an hour. And I find that, like, amazing. It's probably one of the biggest things that I, like, when I have a house, my dream is to have that set up at home.
Yeah. So your YouTube, your TikTok, your Instagram, you're connected a lot. So disconnecting, do you find that hard, or do you actually want to do more of it? Do you find it hard to disconnect, or do you like disconnect?
I've gotten better in the evenings at doing it. To be honest, I'm quite an early riser, and I'm like, go, go, go from the start. But come like even 6 p.m., I start like fading.
Yeah.
So I try now, like, kind of from like maybe after dinner, just as much as I can disconnecting, which has helped a lot. Yeah, because I think it's not good to always be on and always scrolling and stuff like that.
Big time. I agree with that 100%. Coming back to the wakeboarding, because like I feel a bit fired up about wakeboarding this. So I want to go out wakeboarding, right? Where can you go in Ireland? Has the sport, and people like you obviously have grown the sport globally and your recognition is there, but has Ireland become more accessible, or is Ireland even a good country for wakeboarding?
Funny, Ireland's like I suppose if we go at a higher level first, Ireland is small, but we have had a good few very successful wakeboarders, which has been brilliant. It went kind of through, I would say, the late kind of teens, like 2018-ish, it was in a really good place. There was loads of places. You could go into Wake Dock, which was in Grand Canal Dock. There was a great place in Cork and Belfast, all over the place, and they were opening up. It suffered lately for one reason, which is insurance. Just struggling. So, like, the insurance, I can't remember Wake Dock's specific scenario, but, like, I think their insurance quote was near enough their turnover, so they just couldn't do it. So now there is a great place in Cork called Ballyhass Lakes. It's an unbelievable place, actually, just in general for like outdoor activity.
Ballyhass,
yeah. They have two locations, but the wakeboard one is in Mallow. But they're just like, their attitude towards it, they have like the most amazing wakeboard community, better than anything else or anywhere else.
Is it boats or is it the
cable? Yeah, cable system. So it's brilliant. I can't recommend that enough. Like that, I would love to. I don't even get to go there enough anymore, okay, being honest. And then there is a place in Belfast, probably not as welcoming to kind of new people and stuff like that. But again, you can go. And there are other places dotted around, smaller, kind of nicher places.
Can you still, so wakeboarding with a boat versus the cable, obviously you don't have the wake from the boat now. So yeah, what's the, you, when you're practicing, you practice on the cable all the time, you still go with a boat or is it all cables?
So when I would have been competitive, it was always on the boat side of stuff. That's like the traditional side of the sport. But it's evolved. Obviously, boats are very expensive. Mm-hmm. The boats themselves, fuel, everything like that. And also the location. So the cable side has become very popular because you can usually get a membership, which depending on the country and where you are, could be similar to a gym membership or a little bit more. And what's also been brilliant about that is they're able to put it in very urban areas and run events with big crowds.
Yeah.
So that's been really nice. I'd say train a little bit on the cable, but it's kind of a different sport. Like some stuff correlates, but you're using ramps and obstacles as opposed to using the wakes. It's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. But both are really fun. I think probably there's as much of a future in both of them, being honest. I think the boat side's still going really, really strong, particularly in the US. Mm-hmm. But across Europe, cable's definitely bigger.
Wow, interesting. Okay, so we have a few quickfire questions.
Okay.
And the very first question is about cars. And I didn't even get into cars properly because the other story is everything else there is just very intriguing, I have to say. Would you call yourself, are you an adrenaline junkie?
I would say that, like a junkie. But yeah, I love like... I like doing like, you know, like whether it's like skydiving or like I'm actually, I never did it, but I was quite close. I only had a few more dollars to get my skydiving license. Like I did a good bit of that. Anything that's a bit what I love. Like the best thing I ever did, I did an aviation aerobatics class where you're actually doing flips in a plane in Goodwood. The best thing I ever did. So yeah, I love all that type of stuff.
I've done a couple of tandem parachute jumps and loved it, but I was happy to know that I wasn't the one responsible for pulling the cable. Okay, so here we go. What's the worst car name you've ever heard?
Oh, I was going to say, unfortunately, it was the Aura Funky Cat, which was a Chinese brand that unfortunately came to Ireland and unlike a lot of other Chinese brands that have done well, they haven't performed too well.
Oh, no way.
So Aura Funky Cat.
If you could MC any sport event in history, which one would it be and why?
I would love to do like a wakeboard on a mass level because I just think it is my sport. It's something I know the most about. So yeah, I would say that in a big city, big crowd, 80,000 people would be insane.
It's wakeboarding. Is it like a visual sport in that sense? Or is a lot, like on the boats, is a lot of it happening out of ways that you can't see?
That's why the boat, funny enough, it wouldn't be boat because boat is hard to spectate. Yeah. You could fit a small into like a football pitch. You could fit a wake park in.
Yeah.
And that would be very visual.
Sounds like you put a bit of thought into this. What is your MC sign out?
Oh, I don't know. I don't really have one. Like, I think I'd usually just be like back to the studio or back to the guys or whoever it is. Yeah.
Okay. What's the first thing you do when you wake up?
I would drink a coffee immediately. Water and coffee straight away.
Okay. Favorite wakeboarding trick of all time?
It's not crazy hard, but it was just like what's called like a backside 180. Not a hard trick, just really enjoyable to do.
Backside 180.
Okay. So you basically like you're do a jump side. And then you turn backwards and you land. The whole thing is it would also be called a blind 180, so you can't see your landing. Just so nice, you land with the rope behind your back.
Nice. What is the weirdest DM you've ever received from a fan?
Oh, I haven't had too many. That's a complete lie. I had this stalker lady from the States. Oh, she blew up the phone constantly and she was making fake accounts. It was pretty crazy. Do you know if the roles had been reversed? Like she would have been put in prison.
Really?
If she was like an older man and I was a 19-year-old girl, like it was fairly deranged. So I got some fairly nude pics from her and stuff. And she was in her like 60s, which, yeah.
No comment. If you had to compete in a sport other than wakeboarding, what would it be?
Motor sport, definitely, 100%, yeah.
Is it specific?
Specifically, I'd love to do drifting, but I don't think I'm good enough at it. So maybe I'd say something a bit more grip focused, but yeah, maybe drifting would be my dream. Yeah.
Like you actually practice drifting now?
Not properly, no. I do have a track car though, but I would do grip days, so there's no
drift. You race a track car?
Don't race, just track days.
No way.
Yeah. But
what type of car?
Nissan 350Z.
Oh, lovely, nice.
Love it, yeah. So
it's Red Bull drifting as well, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. So I'd love to do it. It's very expensive to get into it.
Of course, anything you mentioned.
But it's hard, like
skillful.
Yeah, I can do a little bit, but not.
What's your worst wipeout story?
Worst one, would have been, there's a video of it actually somewhere, I don't know where. It was on a trick called a Whirly 5, and basically you're doing like a flip with a 540 degree spin, but I went probably 580 degrees or 590 degrees, and I went, the problem was the ropes behind my back, and I got like fully whiplashed, but it was just awful, and I felt that pain, I think, for a lot.
Have you had any bad injuries?
Touch wood, no. I've had a little bit of tendon issues, and then the worst one I've kind of still suffer from a little bit is bad sciatica. Yes. But other than that, I've been, touch wood, quite good.
Like, because when you hit the water, you hit it hard, so if you had concussions or anything?
Been knocked out a couple of times.
Okay.
But yeah, not too bad. I've like split open helmets, like, yeah, absolutely, but they tend to just be like a hit, and then you're okay a few days later.
What's the most ridiculous sponsorship offer you've ever gotten?
There was a small brand, it wasn't really, it was a small clothing brand that they didn't pay me excessively, but they paid me pretty consistently for a long time, and they definitely were making it back, and I felt a bit guilty, but sometimes
you gotta do that.
Yeah.
So aside from your 350, is it Nissan 350? Yeah. What's your favorite car?
Nissan GTR. I like Nissan. I actually love German cars too, right. But Nissan GTR, yeah.
Okay, brilliant. So when you're testing your cars, are you just testing for general public, or are you testing like performance cars, testing everything?
98% are just general normal cars that everyone buys. Probably four times a year you get something really exciting, and okay, that they're like the best weeks.
And what's your least favorite car that you've ever test drove at the moment?
Not a huge fan on the original Nissan Leaf. Yeah, there's a new one coming this year, so okay, maybe some redemption.
So we look forward to that review. So David, a final little piece is for people who are interested to hear more about your journey and what you're doing. How can they follow you? What's the channels of choice?
Yeah, I mean, my own personal one is just David OC on Instagram, I suppose, or on YouTube as well. But also then, like, if they're interested in car stuff, there's Done Deal. This year, I think I'm going to try and incorporate a little bit more of the business stuff on my personal channel. It's traditionally just been wakeboarding. And then, yeah, that's, we also have like Making Waves media accounts, but that's just kind of pushing the work that we're making, if that makes sense.
Well, maybe someone wants to work with you after hearing your story. Listen, I have been I've really enjoyed this, I have to say, and I'm sitting here, which, as I said, I'm getting inspired. I want to get back out on a wakeboard or do something. Maybe I'll go out wakeboarding with you someday.
Absolutely, you're more than welcome.
I'd love that. That'd be one for the books. I think I'd kind of go in straight lines and do little jumps, and that's about as far as I go.
We'll get you on over a little ramp or something.
Yeah, I love it. David, listen, thank you so much for giving up your Sunday to come in and chat to me today.
Thanks.
There could be a round two to this talk, if I'm being honest.
Love to. Thank you so much for your time.